Welcome to This Is Whole Life, a podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida.
Join me, Ken Wetmore, lead pastor, and Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor, along with our communication team, Randy and Lucas. Take a look back, a look deeper, and a peek into the week ahead.
Here we explore meaningful conversations about spirituality, community, and living with purpose.
We don't have all the answers, but we are walking the journey together.
Wherever you're listening from, you're wanted here.
This is Whole Life.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 517 of This Is Whole Life. This week we are digging deeper without our master shoveler, Ken. He's gone. I heard he's coming back on good authority.
That's the rumor.
Is that the rumor? Mm-hmm. Can you confirm and that?
I cannot confirm or deny because I did get a picture of Ken and Rochelle at a restaurant and it looked like they were having a lot of fun. So I hope they come back, but I cannot guarantee it.
So We have proof of life. We have proof that, yeah, but we're not sure they're coming back for sure.
Well, we put an air tag in his backpack, so we'll track him down.
Okay. Lucas knows all.
So at least we'll know where they are, whether or not, when we need to start looking. Okay, that's a good idea. Man, that's a great idea. You know, guys, every week we go a little bit deeper into the message of the previous week here at Whole Life. And the only thing our conversation could possibly lack, because we've got great people here every week, if it's just the regular team. And again, this week we have a special guest, so we're excited about that. But whether you're attend online or maybe you're, you know, chubby fingers like me, chubby thumbs from the front row, your voice matters and we'd love to hear from you. Podcast at wholelife.church or voicemail or text 407-965-1607. And when you join the conversation, it's just a whole lot more fun. So if Ken is missing, we know Melanie's here, we know Lucas is here, we know I'm here, that only leaves the special guest. Melanie, would you do the honors, please?
I would love to. Our special guest for today is Dr. Hurley Paolini. She is not only a licensed clinical psychologist, but she's also just a cool, very wise, insightful person. So I was excited, Melanie, when she agreed to kick off Mental Health Awareness Month for us with a sermon. Actually, Hurley's one of the very first people I met when I was when I came to Whole Life.
Yeah, really?
Someone said, you have to meet her. And so they brought me over and introduced me. And I've really had a good time getting to know Hurley. But so there's the introduction.
So Hurley, tell us a little bit about who you are for those that are listening that may not be members here. They may never, I think there's quite a few that have never stepped foot on campus and they get an idea of who you are maybe, and that'll help them with where the message is coming from this week.
Sure. Thank you, Randy. And thank you, Melanie. It's been really kind of like a very mutual feeling when we got introduced and getting to know each other since then. What can I tell you about me that you haven't already said? I am a licensed psychologist. I have been for many decades now. It's been my privilege to work with healthcare professionals, with physicians in particular, for the past 20-some years, and then before that at Andrews University. But the thing you need to know that is like most cool about me is that I am the mother of three sons, and that I love soccer, and of course, World Cup is coming up, so that will be lots of nights where there will be no sleeping as we watch the game.
Lucas looks like he's really tracking with you.
This is Brazil's time this year.
Oh, I hope so.
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
All right.
That is my sincere hope.
See, people, this is how friends are made at the table.
Exactly. Bonding just occurred here.
Yes. And other than that, I would say I love music. And so I play for the Orlando Orchestra. I play the flute. Oh. And so that's my therapy.
The flute?
Yes.
My wife plays the flute.
There you go.
That? For the symphony. So if we checked your playlist, what was your most listened to either band, genre, or whatever from last year?
From last year.
Yeah, what do you think you listened to the most?
Oh my God. We were doing so many really hard songs for the orchestra that I think most of all it was like mostly John Williams's music.
Gotcha.
You know, like all the Star Wars and E.T. and things like that.
Those are the best. Yeah. I will admit, one of my favorite things ever was when Ellie was in band in high school. They did one year it was their opener every night was the Star Wars theme. They did a three, but like the open, the last song before everybody came out on the field was the Star Wars theme. And that's pretty cool. That's
very, very cool. Yeah. Now with the boys, I love to do James Bond.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. With the cello and the violin.
Oh, cello.
Oh, yeah.
I love the cello.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, wait, we need to hear this. Is there a link or something somewhere?
No, just for fun.
I mean, we have a little space in here. They could come. I mean.
Yeah, they'd have to be flown from Seattle.
Okay, all right, so we'll start taking donations.
Donations now. Car washing.
Bake sale.
Excellent. Well, Hurdley, first of all, thank you for coming because, you know, we know that when we come and we ask you to preach, you have to preach twice and it's a back-to-back scenario. And then it's like, oh, by the way, you're free on Tuesday, right? You could come and hang out at the podcast. So we know we ask a lot. But also, it always feels good when people come up after and say, I really resonated with your message. Thank you for what you said today. I needed to hear it. And today we got an email that said, with the subject line of amen. And in quotations, it said, asking for help is not a lack of faith. It is wisdom. It is the stewardship of the whole life that God has given us. These words need to be an undeniable and consistent message throughout every venue for worship and every ministry. These words warmed my soul. Thank you, Dr. Hurdley, for saying them. Carolina Dave.
Wow.
So this week, the usual voicemail turned into an email, but thank you. Carolina Dave for jumping in as always.
Thank you.
We do have one from the Slack from Nate, but I'm going to save that one for question time with Lucas because I think it might be a nice way for us to wrap everything up today. So we'll save that one for that. And the thing that I was not surprised about in your message, there were a lot of little surprises here and there. But right off the bat, I think, you know, you were kind of setting the stage saying, if there's anything people don't want to discuss, it's mental health. And right. We all have the internal chuckle that comes with that, like, oh, everybody else do? Okay, good. Everybody's with me. And I know this is a question that probably has 1,000 or more answers, but if we dig deep enough, is there an area of our lives, maybe it's our subconscious, that we could really pin down why people were all so different, but like we unite in this one thing that nobody wants to talk about mental health. And why, what is it about us as humans that we can differ on so many things, but we can all get on board with, hey, let's have mental health awareness month. Nah. Let's not. Or maybe we should start a small group and talk about our problems. Nah. Those are always unanimous. Why is that? I don't know if it has an answer, but it just seems like it's awfully weird that all of us can seem to be on that train when we are so few of us on every other train.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if this is the answer, Randy, but I would say personally, I think we all grow up sort of like attempting to be independent and attempting to sort of like not be vulnerable. And I think it has to do with that. It has to do with the idea that, hey, I need help or that I'm feeling sad or something. And most of us actually want to be in control. And we were taught that that's what looks good. That is the strong thing to do, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot of myth about mental health and about, you know, feeling down. That's why we like testimonials that are positive and that are all glorious and like, you know, the end of the story kind of thing. And we forget that there's this dark night of the soul that we all go through from time to time, or that, you know, there are the feelings that are not so great to have, you know. So as a society or a culture, I think we have a hard time actually sort of, you know, sharing that, finding safe spaces to do so. And I think that's why this is kind of like more of a, you know, a hard topic to hit.
I wonder also if it's because it's not something you can readily see. You know, if I break my leg and I come in with a cast, people say, oh, wow, what did you do to your leg? You know, and Randy might carry my stuff for me or Lucas might open the door because they can see that there's an injury. But when it comes to mental health, it's very, very hard to have that be a tangible injury or a tangible wound or a tangible something that needs to be addressed.
Right. And then when you add to that the whole idea that, hey, if you have enough faith or if you pray enough, then you're not going to feel these things. And have you prayed yet, sister or brother? Or, you know, then
no one would say to me if I walked in with a cast on my leg.
No
right?
one would.
Nobody's going to say, well, if you only had faith.
Right. It wouldn't have happened. Exactly.
That's true.
That's exactly right. I mean, we go to funerals sometimes, we don't even know the person, and then everybody's crying because that is kind of like suddenly it's sanctioned, right, for us to feel something. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's like people have to keep it down their throats, and it's like not something we share very much.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way necessarily, but now that you've mentioned it, and church, though, is really weird in that every sermon has that dark night in it,
yes.
right? I mean, nearly, if it's any kind of a testimonial.
Yes.
But nobody walks out and is like, well, that was the darkest night of my life, and I'm still suffering. You guys have a great Sabbath. And walk away, right?
Right.
Nobody would finish a message that way. And because, but I mean, I don't know, maybe we should. And just leave it with, you know, like the movie where there's four of us watching the same movie and all four of us are like, so how do you think, what do you think that meant at the end? Mm. Well, I think X, Y, and Z. No, are you kidding? Of course not. Because of this, this happened. And you have four different responses. You know, let somebody else figure out what the meaning of it is. But that doesn't seem, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of great answers. And last week we talked about with Nehemiah, right towards the end, and this just popped in my head, Melanie said, well, what do I do if the outcome isn't the outcome that I prayed for? So it's easy when we, you know, finish up and it's like, well, and then
put a bow on it.
And then God swooped in and answered my prayer the way I wanted to. So that means God's listening. God loves me. And you should let God love you too, because, you know, or you should love God back because he loves you. When more than frequently, we don't always get the whole thing wrapped in a bow, like Melanie talked about. Mm-hmm. But where do you leave that if it's not leaving on a high note, because that's what we want people to remember? How do you leave it though if you don't leave it that way? How do you, what's the message if we don't? It's good to be in that time because we're learning and.
Yeah, so whether we like to be in the time or not, we are all going to go through some kind of dark night of the soul. Yeah. I think what's important to remember is, first of all, you're not alone, right? Mm-hmm. God said, I'll walk with you through the valley of death or whatever the valley may be. So it's obvious there isn't just top of the mountain kind of stuff, right? The other thing is that as believers or as friends or, you know, we walk together. And if we were to welcome them more, we can't fix it. It's not about having the answers. It's really about having companionship for those moments where there are no answers and we're just speechless, right? I think you see a lot of that in the Psalms. You see a lot of the lament, you know? And it's not necessarily that people got the answers they needed. It's like they got to express it, and God is big enough to actually handle that.
So you're saying that with all of your knowledge of mental health,
yes,
you don't have the answers to all of the questions.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yes.
Okay. Brandy looks so disappointed.
I know. I'm so sorry, Brandy. I am.
Well, the thing that made me think of that was you mentioned when you were in practice, you know, you were right. kind of set before. You were to Andrews for a long time. Mm-hmm. You had everything kind of going in the right direction. And then it's like, hey, I've got this idea. Mm. And then it's like, what did I do?
Yeah.
I moved out in faith. And in my years ago, I spent 12 years as a financial advisor in the medical setting over at Advent Health. And we were, I didn't work for the system. We were a vendor. Mm. But we, a lot of our clients were physicians. And you said something that, you know, that physicians need to be reminded about their humanity and their needs in mental health and all of that. And I thought, but certainly someone who is counseling people must have the answers, right?
You see, I consider myself a good companion. I'm not there for the answers, but together we may actually arrive someplace that is, you know, more palatable maybe at times, or a better understanding of something. But answers is not really what the job is, you know.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Because if there really aren't any in many cases,
right,
or there could be multiples, that's hard to know because it's like, well, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this.
Right.
I'm not sure. And we really chase hard after answers.
I know.
So what should we collectively then, you said I'm a good companion
right
in that process. What does that look like for the end game? If I'm a good companion to you during your dark night, what am I doing? And what should I go? Oh man, that worked out, I think, pretty well because we came to something, or we decided something, or we decided nothing. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I see it a little different if you are a friend or if you are a person like me, a mental health provider.
Right.
Yeah, right? So I bring some expertise into it. Let's say, you know, some knowledge of the brain, some knowledge of, you know, how people develop, how relationships work or not. And the person is the expert in their own life and their history. And the two of us together are like sort of like painting a canvas, you know. So the person puts something in there, I put something in there, and then at some point we look back and there's a better understanding of the issues and the person, and there's a self-awareness that is grown. And yes, some of the pain may be lessened because the person feels deeply understood. Like in that initial space, the thing that worked the best with the physicians is that for the first time they were heard and they felt really understood. And that made a huge difference for them to feel safer, and it gives better insight into what they need to do, you know, to create better mental health and wellness in general. Now, if you are a friend, listening generously, it's usually a really good place to be. In that dark night of the soul, it's also sort of like, you know, suspending judgment. That's really helpful. And asking open questions when you do ask questions. Not interrogating the person, but things like, you know, what is this like for you? Or what is the hardest thing about this? Or where do you find comfort right now? And it may be nowhere,
yeah,
right?
Maybe nowhere, yeah.
But the person is just listening and so incredibly empathic and understanding, you know, and that is a huge healing place.
Wow. Hmm. Well, you know, that sounds like something very similar to what we have here at the church in our Stephen Ministries program.
Right.
And my wife was one of the early adopters to becoming one of the Stephen's ministers. And if it's one thing that I learned from her, was she became an amazing listener.
Yes.
She was already a good listener before,
yes,
but with a little bit of extra training.
Yes.
Like really that part. And you said, there's nothing like the power of truly listening to someone.
Right.
And last week, we had someone write into us and say, you guys missed a huge opportunity to tell people about Stephen's ministers, because we try to, anytime that the subject comes up and we know there are people that are holding on to something, right?
Yeah.
We know that there's something that they would love to, you know, get off the chest. That doesn't seem right, but they would like to be able to talk to someone and walk with them through situations and through life, just life that needs someone, like you said, to just be there and be that companion. And so I want to make sure that this week is so including for if you're listening last week, this applies to last week's episode too. But we have a group of Stephen's ministers. They're going to be starting another training session coming up. Do you remember, Lucas, when we met with them, when it's coming? Is it July?
Not the exact date. I think July.
So keep an eye out for it, and we'll talk about it more here on the podcast, and you'll see it everywhere around church when that's happening. But if you could be someone that could be one of those companions that could walk alongside someone when they have a time of need, we need you to step up and be a part of that program. Or if you're someone who just needs someone, there are Stevens ministers here ready to walk alongside of you, listen, be that companion. So,
also, I think it's important to mention a couple things. One is it doesn't cost anything.
Right.
Because sometimes that's a barrier for people.
Yeah. Sure.
Another thing is it is completely confidential. So you don't have to have any concern that people are talking about you around church or anything like that.
Yeah.
The people who are Stephen ministers are very careful to maintain confidentiality. And they're also just very incredibly nice people who are good listeners and who are definitely have a heart for this. So,
And the confidentiality coming from my wife being in that role where, you know, it's like, oh, where are you going tonight? I've got a meeting. Oh, right. Your meeting. And then that's like, she's like, don't ask.
That's all.
Because I can't tell you anything more than that.
That's all you're going to hear.
That's it. And they, you know, and the thing is too, the people that become involved in this, they're blessed as well. So don't think of it like if you're thinking, oh, I don't know if I have the, go and check it out and see if maybe you do have the tools that they can equip you with, because it really is rewarding for the person that does the listening as well. When you're listening and you're that companion and you see the change, because I could tell no matter what, even though I didn't know anything about anything, when like how things went, when you come back and it's like, there's a big smile and it's like, good night, you know, and that's a reward for both people being a part of the process. And that's really like when we talk about family here at Whole Life, that's a big part of it. So if you want to find out more, you can go to our website and under the ministries tab, I don't remember the URL. It's a little bit long. I think it's Stevens Ministries.
Stephen Ministries.
WholeLife.church /Stephen Ministries. And they have a page there. You can see some of the people that were early on. There's some videos there. It explains everything. And you want to get contacted, there's a form to fill out right there. So please do check that out.
Nice.
Maybe I really want the story. I thought it was, I want to use this and somehow I want this to happen in my life where the board or the group asked you how this had anything to do with healthcare. And you said you had to get your blood pressure under control. And then you sent a 5-page bibliography to 12-page summary for the 1-word response. Okay.
Yep.
Sometimes it feels really good to win a big battle, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And there were many big battles there, but that was one of them for sure. And again, this is not a statement about all the people were bad or anything like that.
Right.
It's culture, and culture is the 1,000 different things we practice every day. And when you do that, a whole entire healthcare system for the longest time did not acknowledge this and certainly did not allow their physicians or their healthcare providers to feel any of their own needs. And so that's a detriment to the healthcare, but they didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, so when I sent that bibliography and the summary, the person obviously read it. The response was short and to the point, but I was really glad that we could go ahead and start.
Yeah.
And that began to change culture a little bit at a time. And we did some pretty creative things there, Randy and team. We did a physician leadership retreat with the physician leaders from each of the hospital, and we took them hiking in the flat top wilderness in Colorado.
Mm.
Yeah. Why? Because the whole thing with PowerPoints and the whole thing with posturing with each other just wasn't the right sort of environment, wasn't the right setting. There, under the stars and sitting around the fire, things got really real.
Yeah.
About themselves, about the self that leads, right? And that's where I wanted to get to. So sometimes you have to be really creative with what do you do to bring out that part that usually kind of like doesn't know it's okay to come out, that has been split off, so to speak, and that hasn't been invited into the different environments. And by the way, it's the same at church. People think that if they have a really great testimonial, they should do that. But to say they're suffering and that they found no answers or that, you know, something is really wrong, it's hard for people to say. We're supposed to smile. We're supposed to say God is good and all that, you know.
I think it's also hard because the people around you, I mean, it might be one thing to express, well, I'm really suffering, but people, a lot of times people around you are not comfortable with your suffering. They're not comfortable with your grief. If the reaction is, you know, is something that's not positive, it doesn't feel safe to be able to express, especially if you get a trite answer, you know. Well, you know, just think about the resurrection or just have faith or just you need to pray some more. Those kinds of answers are such roadblocks to authenticity.
That's right, Melanie. And very sad. It really hurts people to risk and then be met with, you know, let's just pray, which is fine. I mean, praying is great. But before we can enter the pain at all, we're sort of like sublimating it, you know. So, yeah, really sad. Lots of people have been hurt and not heard and felt really uncared for.
Yeah. So if we want people to be able to be authentic in their suffering, we have to be able to allow it, allow space for it.
Yeah, and there are times when it's not about, like you said, Brandy, having answers or even speaking. It's like, you know, when necessary, use words. Otherwise, just use your presence.
Man, I like that. Well, and I think that part of it, too, you mentioned that you found that medical culture versus church culture was very similar. And just having seen and worked in that environment, again, it's almost like being a fly in the wall. People would come in and there was nothing. I mean, we were there to help them with you know, investments and retirement and things like that. And then you became the listener because that's what a lot of people scheduled appointments when they had just had like a bad week. And they come in and they know you're going to listen. I mean, they have you as a captive audience because you can't risk, you know, there's a certain amount of, because that's in a way, one of my coworkers who'd been in the business for years, over 45 years. And she said, well, we really are the therapists of our domain, because everybody knows that in the same way that if I talk to you professionally, you can't tell anybody about what we talked about. And it's the same with, it was the same with us. You know, if you were outside the fact that, you know, people might see you walk into our office and they would assume that maybe you were a client, we weren't allowed to say anything, right? So people would tell you the most wild stories than you could possibly imagine. And some days you left going, I think I need to talk to somebody about what somebody told me by the end of the day. And I feel like when you said it, it kind of brought those two together, because I feel like sometimes at church, it's a little bit the same way, where people aren't as willing to talk about it. But yet there's a feeling that we should be able to talk about it. I should be able to tell someone what's going on. But in almost in a magnetic opposite, like polarization, like I don't want to talk about it because what if, I mean, I don't know who.
Right.
And especially as Adventists, it's like everybody knows everybody.
You know what I dream about, Randy? I dream about church becoming almost like a 12-step group. You know what I mean? Like, one can come here and say, hey, I'm struggling with this addiction, or I have this issue, I'm suffering from depression, or whatever it may be, or I'm going through this unfathomable, you know, kind of grief, that we would be able to do that. And nobody would freak out, because this is the humanity of it all. And we are all humans. And yes, we have tremendous joy and we have all kinds of glorious moments. And then there are all these other moments as well. And why should we leave that out of our worship, out of our interaction and our fellowship? Wouldn't that be great if we could just support each other like humans that we are? I know that's a lot of dreaming on my part. But.
No, but it's a nice dream.
I think so.
I mean, if that were, and I don't know why we attach, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons why, but sometimes we feel like we're superior to someone if they're struggling with something that we feel is like, ooh, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. You know, like, ooh, they have a, like you said, a substance abuse problem. And the other person's like, well, I gossip a little here and there, but because did you know what was that? You know, and depending on who you talk to, like those could inversely be to one person a much bigger problem than the other. And
we judge. That's what we do. Yeah. And when you go to AA or you go to NA, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, and you say, I am so-and-so, hello, so-and-so, and everybody's just welcoming. No one's judging. Everybody has a story, right? And church is no different. We are all here because we're broken, we're sinners, and we are also sons and daughters of God. And so suspending judgment would be the first thing.
I think that the intentionality behind it, like if, for example, you know, I mean, we had a sermon on mental health awareness this past week. That doesn't automatically move us into the realm of being, you know, a fully accepting 12-step type church. But I think even just creating the space for the conversation and then continually reminding ourselves, this is who we want to be. We want to be this safe space. We want people to show up as they are and not as a, you know, a religious caricature of themselves. We want people to be who they are so that we can authentically grow together. And so I think that your sermon moved us, you know, in a direction, a positive direction. But I think it's the continuation of reminding ourselves that this is who we want to be, and we want to and be able to invite people into that safe space.
Yeah, I think the more we talk about it from the front through different ways, because this past week I accidentally bumped into someone, and I know their husband, I don't really know them, and they stopped me and they put their hand on my shoulder and they said, I have not been able to stop thinking about your message. I really enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, well, you know, thank you. That's great. And then someone else said, do you have a couple minutes? And I'm like, at the very moment, no, but, cause I was helping some Sabbath school classes, get some stuff done upstairs, but I'm like, let's get together and talk. They're like, I didn't know I had so much in common with you. And so I feel like even those things that, you know, might be in our past, but you don't know for sure what might be still in the present, being able to talk to someone who you feel like that to me is so important, is that if you feel like there's someone there that you know shares a piece of your journey, or even maybe just some similarities, where I think they would understand what I was talking about if I talk to them, and they seem approachable. They seem, you know, maybe amicable to having a conversation. And I don't know how you do that necessarily without being like, I don't know, walking around with this shirt that says, ask me a question about, you know, whatever. I don't know.
You'll be surprised, right? Yeah. How people actually can tell someone who's approachable and somebody who's not.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you have any secrets that we can, you know, we can just kind of, you know?
So I will say this. I don't have secrets, though, but I will say what I have learned. For example, the research says that, you know, when a patient is at a doctor's office, that it takes about 60 seconds for them to be interrupted. Okay.
Okay.
So I would say listening is it's. Just that posture of sort of like not being bored, not interrupting someone, but simply listening.
Okay. Right?
The other thing I would say, an approachable person would sort of not rush past, you know what I mean? If someone is looking like they are struggling, and if you really mean to sort of be available, then you walk with them, perhaps, you know, or you invite, you know, by an open question, and then you just sit back to listen. You know, let the person lead, follow that, you know.
That is probably in body language and in actual practice much different than much of what we see modeled for us today anywhere else, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. There's a couple of tips you weren't expecting. I like that. Thank you. So the other thing that you said that I wanted to make sure that we touched on, just because I felt like we often look at somebody else's life and go, ooh, that's nice. Now, if I had a little bit of that and just a little bit of that, I think like it would, my life would be pretty solid, pretty perfect. Like they seem like they've got it all together. And I didn't get it, the quote, I didn't quote you, but basically no one is a mean and the hierarchy of society means nothing. That the person you think has it all together from way up, you know, way up here to the person sitting next to you, mm-hmm. we're all in the same boat. Yes. We all have the same things. We all deal with the same struggles.
Yes.
Just some of us hide them better than others, maybe.
Well, yeah. I think we all try and hide, right? I think the safer, you mentioned, Melanie, a secure and safe environment, which is what is needed for people to begin showing up more with their whole selves. Mm-hmm. So the more the environment, it's sort of, you know, non-judgmental, it's welcoming, and there are people who truly are in touch with their own humanity, the more you will see people then showing up in a more real way.
Wow. Yeah, that's really good.
And I think that's another thing that you talked about that I thought was so so powerful was the fact that Jesus asked the community to unbind yes. Lazarus. Mm-hmm. And that image has really stuck with me because it's not something that we can really do alone. Yeah. So it's necessary for us to be the kind of community
yes.
that can do the unbinding, that can handle the unbinding.
Yes.
So that we can be that healing, restorative kind of place, non-judgmental place for people.
Yeah, I think that's essential. And it's essential that we attend to our own unbinding mm-hmm. as well, because if we want to be truly there for other people's unbinding, we have to attend to ours.
Yeah.
There's no immunity, like you said, yeah. Randy. Yeah.
So the other thing that I thought was really interesting was you talked about the brain being, you know, it's shrinking or mm-hmm. it's growing, it's shrinking. And,
yeah,
you know, the older we get, I was just, I don't know how, what this has to do with the message necessarily, but, you know, thinking about all the opportunities as you get older that you're thinking, I don't know, maybe my brain doesn't feel like I get to places as fast as I used to, or the answer eludes me. It's right. And oh man. And that seems to happen a lot. Or, you know, if it's not in my calendar, it's not happening. And sometimes even if it is, I'm like, well, I didn't read that right. I totally thought that was something completely different. And so are you saying that as we get older, I mean, if we maybe apply some principles, there's hope for us yet?
Yes. I am. And that seems kind of Pollyannish, but it isn't. I'm not suggesting that as we get older, that our brains do not age as well, sure. or that there are certain connections that are not as sharp as they used to be. But what I'm suggesting is depending on what we practice and how we engage the brain, that we can offset some of that. Mm. That's what I'm suggesting. That's what we have learned actually with neuroscience right now, is that the brain is constantly changing, even in old age. Wow. So the more you engage that brain, the more you do, you know, practices on a daily basis, including meditation or exercise, and then community, for example. Having friendships, having relationships, all of that is really important for the brain.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right.
No matter what age.
I think we're, well, I looked at you and said we're, and I shouldn't have because I'm older than you, but I feel better.
You're older than me by just a hair. So.
I feel a little better. I got to start.
But I will enjoy the distance.
Yes.
I will feel super, super young.
The distance is wide.
Well, I'm not comfortable comparing ages.
Neither am I. That's why I said I didn't want to include the weird in that, because I was like, wait a minute. Why is he dragging me into that decade? Why? So, okay, we're going to get to questions with Lucas in just a second. And this is from Slack. This is from Nate. He said, as I think about mental health and our church, I wonder what are two or three things every member can do to enhance their own mental health, and maybe two to three things we can live out in our encounters with our church family.
Mm.
What could we do that? And I think we talked about Mm-hmm. I would say maybe the first one is having that open personality that you talked about, not interrupting, asking mm-hmm. open-ended questions, listening, mm-hmm. don't hurry, walk mm-hmm. alongside. That might be the one that might surprise people the right. most to actually find someone that's practicing that, right?
I know. So I would backtrack that question a little bit and go for the first part of it, because what he said is, what can we do, right, mm-hmm. for our own mental health? And I think the sermon had some real sort of like, you know, steps, like yeah. practical steps. The first is, let us not shy from certain emotions, okay. right? We can't just have positive emotions. That's not realistic. That's not life, right? Yeah. And so being comfortable with accepting and then processing and having safe places to process our emotions, like Jesus did. He cried in the middle of the crowd, right? Certainly that's what that first step is about. We have to accept what is, okay. right? And then feel it and name it. And then the second thing we said is, you know, reflect, take a look. What is it that keeps repeating itself that is, you know, that may be a fruit of trauma, that may be something we experienced before and we haven't quite resolved because we minimized it or because we denied it or we never dealt with it, you know?
Yeah.
And it keeps showing up in everything we do and in all of our relationships. That was the second one.
Yep.
Yeah, I would say if we can do those two things, wow, we're a long ways from actually being healthier.
Yeah, we may have to put our collective brains together and figure out some activities or some maybe some cool ways that we could incorporate that into worship somehow, right? Where we could maybe do something that would help people practice a little bit of it and just maybe introduce and take a little time. I don't know. That maybe that's too much. Maybe that step's too big. I don't know.
He's looking at me.
I'm backtracking.
Let's talk about it some more, Randy.
I'm backtracking because I'm like, wait a minute. That means if I was sitting there, then I have to participate. We don't want to talk about that. Okay. Maybe not. Okay.
All the introverts are getting nervous right now.
You're going to ask me to speak. Oh, I knew it would come to this.
And I would say to that, it's everything that is safe is invitational. There's no demand in it. Mm-hmm. There's no sort of have to. When you create a space for people, some people will take you up on it. Some people won't. It's always good.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, those are four really good things though to stop and think about is what we can do to kind of prepare ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then as a church family, that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. All right, Lucas, let's get to our, last of our questions.
All right. First question. I am wondering what the difference is between demon possession and mental health challenges, if any. Is demon possession the language of the time used for people acting in ways that didn't usually act? Is all mental unwellness the same as demon possession? How does the church better engage people who may be behaving differently or struggling with something that we don't understand?
Mercy. To us all. There are at least 10 questions there in that one question, right? People just are packing it for sure. Let me give it a shot. I'm not an expert on demon possession. I have seen it actually as I was growing up. I'm going to offer just my personal perspective. I'm not, again, an expert on it. I would say that there are times when demon possession and mental illness now, they are kind of intertwined. I think there are times when that happens because, again, I think that there's a vulnerability that comes when there is a mental illness. And so any open path that is vulnerable, whether it be physical or whether it be like a brain injury or whatever, might lead to something that, you know, would be a more spiritual kind of struggle. So I can't answer the question about whether that's what was happening in Jesus's time. That's beyond, you know, it could be that some of it was, sure. It could be that some of it was not.
Yeah.
I think we have to hold the tension that there is one and the other. Sometimes the two are together and sometimes they're separate. That's how I see it. Mm. And so it's very hard to define. And I think at times we have to really sit with it to sort of decide if somebody's psychotic for, you know, like from a schizophrenia or some other mental illness, or whether somebody is demon possessed, you know?
Yeah.
So I believe in demon possession. I don't think it's that common, but I believe that it exists. And I don't think that most of what we see today in terms of mental illness, that is psychosis, is actually any kind of demon possession. Hmm.
That's a great answer, because I wouldn't have known where to start. So perfect. Thank you.
I don't know if I answered the entire question. And what do we do? I say, again, and I am saying this a lot, but I really believe that the first thing to do is to not judge. It's to not think you know what it is. A lot of the times I take a lot of time with people before I make a, you know, sort of like I create a thought about what might be happening here. And I check against a lot of different things when I'm working with someone before I make a recommendation, before I make a diagnosis. You know, I think it's important for us not to say, oh, this is it, or this is, you've got to sit with it a while. And sometimes it's great to have even like a person who is a spiritual person, like a pastor, with a therapist, you know, to kind of look at it together.
I was just going
to
say, this isn't something you'd want to go at with yourself with no training and,
right.
and just be like, I'm pretty sure I know what this is.
Right.
A pastor. Right. And then like, hey, maybe the pastor would be like, hey, let's go talk to someone together or somehow make that work.
Yeah. I think that's part of the reason why there's so much stigmatization, because in the biblical record, you know, any time there was anything that resembled mental health issue, it's called demon possession or you know, some sort of demonic harassment or something like that, which I think has really done a huge detriment.
Yes.
To people who are struggling. I mean, you said yourself, this is, you know, it's mental health is physical health.
Right.
And we wouldn't look at someone who, you know, has a broken leg and say, wow, let us exorcise the demon from you because you should be able to walk.
Yeah.
We wouldn't do that. But yet we do that when it comes to someone's mind sometimes, or we assume that it's some sort of spiritual oppression when it's a neurotransmitter imbalance, you know?
Right.
And so I think I'm very, I want to make sure that we protect the space for mental health as physical health and peel away the stigmatization, because if I'm depressed or if I'm, you know, or if I'm hearing voices or something like that, and and I feel like people are going to think that it's some sort of demonic force, then it's going to be really, really hard for me to ask for help from a mental health professional.
I'm not even talking to my pastor if that's what I think is going to happen. I mean, I don't want them to think that, you know, that there's something, I guess none of us want to think that something's wrong with us, even like you said, but if it's a broken leg, I don't know if that's something wrong with you. It's just something that happened, and it's wrong because it doesn't work correctly until it's healed. But the things that we don't understand and that we're probably just looking at that person going, man, what if that was me? You know, that I wouldn't, I'm afraid of what the answer would be, because I wouldn't want the answer for me. So I think there's part of that too, where it's just find a professional to help before we dig too deep into what we think might be wrong.
Right. And either way, this person is a person in need, right? And this is a person who really deserves compassion and who deserves good care instead of judgment. Either way, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, judgment doesn't help anything. It's not a cure for anything except temporarily making yourself feel superior, but that too will pass.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Question number two. I remember in my last church when USAID was ended last year, I mentioned that at a prayer meeting that I worried about those who are harmed by the ending of this life-saving aid. An elder responded by saying, you just don't have enough faith. When Jesus wept, would we say he didn't have enough faith?
I think we can do harm with our trite religious cliches. We must have empathy just as Christ did.
Well, great question. Really a great question. And it breaks my heart. I'm so sorry. This person was at a meeting where this is what they got in response to their empathy and their feeling for people who are now suffering without the food, without the vaccines, without the things that they need. So unfortunately, this happens a lot in church when we don't want to feel something that is really crucial or that is painful. We simply say, well, you know, let's pray, let's have enough faith, or maybe you don't have enough faith, the sister, pull yourself together kind of thing. As a church, I think we would do well to do what Jesus did. He entered the grief, right? And this has nothing to do with faith. He cried. Sure. He was deeply grieving, right? And I think that sometimes that takes us out of the necessary activism that we should be engaging when these things are happening and people are suffering.
Yeah.
We go and pray. I'm not saying don't go pray. I'm just saying sometimes we pray and we get up from our knees and we go do some canvassing.
Yeah.
To make change, right? And we vote with our feet, and we do some things that that we need to do. Jesus was an activist, is what he was. He was going against the political processes of the time. And when people were hurting, he was right there, and he was naming it for what it was. And it wasn't, oh, he didn't have enough faith. It's like sometimes we have to speak truth to power. Right. And sometimes we have to grieve for injustice and for people suffering needlessly.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, last question. I am always the person that is there for others going through hard times. I personally am now in a season of grief and loss of a long relationship, as well as other family relational difficulties. So my question is, how can I give the support to others when I myself am in need of emotional support? Lately, I feel like I don't have something to give to them, but then I feel guilty that I feel that way because they need me.
Mm. Ouch.
Ouch, for sure. Oof. So the first thing I would say is, I'm sorry you're going through this period of grief and this period of loss. It sounds like a tough time, right? And so we sit here and we're holding this. And it's difficult for those of us who are always able to help other people and then find ourselves in that place of being in need ourselves, yeah. Right? So I would say, just like in an airplane, they say, put your mask on first.
There you go.
Right? Attend to your grief. And this is not necessary guilt at all, because the need in the world will always be there, and the need of your friends and family will always be there. But first things first, we are the instruments of this healing, each of us. And when we are in need, we have to pause to attend to that need.
Mm. Well, that sounds so easy. Yep. I like that pause to attend to the need. Well, of course we should. That makes perfect sense. But
yeah, you'd be surprised how many people in the airplane do not put their own mask on first and pass out, and then they can't help anyone.
They can't help anyone. No, that's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. Well, Hurdley, again, thank you so much, not only for your message, but for coming here today. Mm-hmm. I think that
my privilege.
Oh, we enjoyed having you so much. And I think there's a lot, if you stop and listen, there was a lot of things that maybe you know in your heart, you just needed to be reminded of. And, you know, put the mask on first. How many times have we flown? And I mean, luckily, I've only been on one flight where the masks, I don't know.
Came down.
I think they came down. If they didn't come down, they should have. It was the worst flight I've ever been on. But I'm trying to remember. I don't think they came down, although I did think some people took them down. We had turbulence, just horrible, horrible turbulence. And it was the only time, one of the few times in my life I really thought I was going to die. So, but yeah, grab the mask first. That's so good. And this, you know, we ask a lot to do both services and then the podcast, but I really feel like, you know, if you're listening today and you resonated with some of these, or if you're like the last person who's been that person that's already been helping but need help, take a pause, put your mask on and see, you know, if you're here, if you happen to be a Whole Life member here, search out Stephen's ministers and let them walk alongside of you. That could be, once your mask is on, then let someone walk alongside of you, let them help.
And you can also recommend to other people.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you are not in a position where you feel like you can provide that sort of companionship or support for someone else because you're dealing with your own thing and you need to put your own mask on, you can also recommend Stephen ministers to people around you who may need somebody to walk with them.
That's true.
One piece of good news is that after Saturday and after the two services, there were a lot of people who really saw the need and yeah. had not admitted to it before. Mm-hmm. And they asked me for referrals, which I have nice. Already done. So nice. I have referred them to therapists in the area that I trust and so forth. And so it was really kind of like almost like, you know, giving permission, you know, and they had, it reached them to say, wait a minute, why am I not doing this? And yeah. I need it, you know?
Well, and sometimes I think we feel like as Christians and it's a world global message of Jesus and that somehow if we can't tell everybody, it's not legitimate or we're not doing our job. But if there's one mm-hmm. person, if you share this episode with someone that you know has been struggling or just share it and with the message of, if you've been struggling, put your, you know, something creative, put your mask on first. If you want to know what that means, listen to the episode, share it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never know who's the person that's going to be just like after the message and said, wow, I really needed mm-hmm. to admit that to myself. And could I have a referral? That's
right.
And even if it's one person, it's well worth your effort to, because sharing is easy. Right. And even the message, once you have it prepared, sharing it's the easy part. Then the next part is being available and doing the things that you've already done. So thank you so much for that.
You're most welcome.
What a great weekend.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So nice. Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure.
All right. So this has been, Lucas and I were talking about this before the show, and this has been one of the weirdest stretches since I've been here as a member or staff and certainly in the podcast, that we've had so many guests in a stretch of 6-7 weeks. And Ken is back this week.
Allegedly.
we will confirm that as soon as possible.
But Hurley, if you could have another sermon on standby for this week, just in case.
just in case, you know, no,
just
no. Yeah. Don't, you'll be fine. It'll be fine. So Ken will be back this week to deliver the message. And then next week, we have another special guest.
We do. Yeah. It will be a very special week. We have Pedro Perez, who's going to be coming and speaking. He actually is going to speak a sermon that fits into the series of
Don't Forget
series. So he's going to follow along in that series with Ken.
And this is the first week of Don't Forget.
Those
Who Raised Us.
Those Who Raised You.
I didn't even write it down. See, I think your positivity is coming through and it's helping
his
my mind.
His gray matter is already expanding. Yeah.
Already. Yeah.
It's tingling.
Good news all the way around.
Yeah, it's got that tingly feel. I'm sure it must be positive, I'm sure. So anyway, guys, seriously though, take advantage of everything that we talked about today. And if you don't know where to start, podcast@wholelife.church. We'll get you in touch with someone here on staff that can help guide you, direct you. Please do share the message. And if you didn't have a chance to hear Hurdley's message, please do. It was a great blend of some fun moments like the okay. and it was her dark night story as well. So please do go back and check out the message because it'll make what we talked about and what you heard today even more meaningful. So you can share that as well. If you swipe up today in today's show notes, you will find a link to Speaking of Grace, which is our sister podcast. Her message is already there and has been listened to quite a few times already when I checked earlier today. So others are already enjoying it. And that's an easy way for you to share that episode as well. So Ken, I'm glad you're not listening because I know better than to have to scold you. Or maybe he's waking up. Melanie, Ken, why are you listening to the podcast?
Somehow I feel like he heard my cautionary tale and he has made sure that it is not part of his playlist. I just feel like that's happening.
Okay. Yeah, I feel pretty good about that. So, but anyway, guys, thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. Thanks for listening to This Is Whole Life. If today's conversation resonated with you, we invite you to subscribe, share, and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. To join the conversation, send a text or voicemail to 407-965-1607 or email podcast@wholelife.church. To learn more about Whole Life Church, worship with us online or in person, visit our website, wholelife.church. Until next time, this is Whole Life.